So we left off last week. We were discussing the prohibition of bona as relates to the love of the Raisa, and then as relates to the love of the Rabbanon. We said that basically, if a person does what's called a binyan aroi, so binyan Raisa, what exactly constitutes binyan aroi was a little bit less clear, but at least according to many opinions, it was a function of time. The same way we have in other areas of the Shabbos, how time plays a critical role in terms of other malachas, kosher, tofer, so too an asiyas ol, or if a person makes a permanent mechitza, a permanent structure, would there be an outright issur deraisa? At least that's the view of many Rishonim. But lemaisa, if you make a temporary structure, that is potentially a problem on a level of the Rabbanim. So there is now a further machlokes of Rishonim. What exactly does that mean? What kind of a temporary structure would be problematic? And again, we want to know, also mutter, we're not as concerned, chayav apot, we want to know, lemaisa, is it also mutter? So here we have a major machlokes, the Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi's opinion is that the isser of asiyas ol, with the Rabbanon, chazav al-gezer, and ol aroi, is only if a person makes a roof. If a person simply puts up a wall, so a wall, an asiyas machitza, it's only derech aroi, is mutter lechatchila, according to Rashi. So the simple reading of Rashi is, no matter what kind of wall you're putting up, no matter what purpose you're trying to put the wall up for, all asiyas mechitza is at worst only, would only be a derabonon, and according to Rashi, is not even a derabonon. Asiyas mechitza saroi is mutter lechatchila, according to Rashi. It's Rabbeinu Tam, and a few places in Shasta, it's called Rabbeinu Tam, who disagrees strongly with Rashi. Rabbeinu Tam's opinion is that it's not an absolute statement that a mechitza saroi is mutter. It depends what the purpose, what the goal of your mechitza is. So here Rabbeinu Tam draws a distinction between what's called a mechitza hamateres in contrast to a mechitza litznius bialma. A mechitza hamateres means that a mechitza that's trying to accomplish something in halach, some halachic purpose, it's coming to be matter something. It means if I wouldn't have this mechitza, I wouldn't be allowed to do activity X, Y, or Z. So the goal of the mechitza is to be mater that activity. That's a mechitza hamateres. And such a mechitza is considered to be significant. It's a very choshev act that you're doing. Before I put up this mechitza, I couldn't do ABC, and now I can. So that kind of a mechitza is problematic, according to Rabbeinu Tam, even though it's only aroi. If it's only a mechitza that's used to be alma, if it's only a mechitza just for modesty reasons, for privacy reasons, but there's no halachic significance to what I'm doing, so that would not pose a problem, even according to the view of Rabbeinu Tam. So unlike Rashi, who permitted mechitzas across the board, all mechitzas aroi amut l'chatchil according to Rashi, Rabbeinu Tam says, not so simple, that you have to look at every case and see, am I doing it for this reason, doing it for that reason? If it's for halachic reason, then it's considered to be more significant. If it's for not halachic reason, then it's considered to be less significant, and it would be actually permissible. So the term is that the Rabbeinu Tam uses a mechitza hamateres. There was a humorous story that happened. This goes back already more than 20 years ago when we first got married. So I used to teach the Shabbos classes in Stern one night a week. So when I gave a final, so I asked the question to give me an example of like three different cases of mechitza hamateres. We'll talk about in a moment what some of those examples are of mechitza hamateres. The problem is I didn't put any, there were no nekudos on the test. And I wrote the word materas, but a lot of the girls thought it was mechitza hamuteras. Let's give an example of mechitza that's permissible to make. So they gave me the exact opposite of what I wanted. I'm looking for the mechitzas hamateras, which are asur, because they're materas. The girls are writing me the examples of mechitzas hamuteras. So I started marking them wrong. But then I started asking myself, it's like in life, when everybody else is making a mistake, except for you, you have to stop the mistake. Wait a second. Maybe you're the one who's making the mistakes. And I went back to the question. Oh my golly, my goodness, they all misread what the question was. So they all got a freebie. Everyone got an extra 10 points on the test. Even those who quote unquote got the wrong answers, those are really the right answers. So mechitza materas is found in the Shittas Rabbeinu Tam. What led Rabbeinu Tam to say this distinction? So Rabbeinu Tam is based on a Gemara, Masechet Eruvin, in the fourth parak, and the Gemara talks about the possibility of making a wall to the sukkah, adding on a wall to the sukkah on Yontif. So the Gemara draws a distinction whether you're making the third wall, whether you're making the fourth wall. So if you're adding on a third wall to the sukkah, the Gemara says that's a problem. Even if it's being done in a very, very temporary way, that's a problem on Yontif. If you're adding on a fourth wall, nishkefel, that's okay. What's the difference? Okay, the Thompson, the answer is obvious. The difference is obvious. But the third wall is necessary because since the halacha tells us that a sukkah requires three walls. That's the first mishnah Masechta Sukkah. And so a sukkah requires a minimum of three walls. That third wall is critical. So if it only had two walls, now you're adding on a third wall, so you're being mata that irity. Before you build that third wall, you couldn't eat in that structure. So now you're created a mechitama terrace. Mashenkin, if you're simply putting on the fourth wall, I don't need it anyway. So what are you making it for? You're making the fourth wall to make it a little more comfortable, to make it a little bit more private, a little more quiet. But those are not halachic reasons, and therefore that fourth wall is not a mechitama terrace, and therefore it actually would be permissible. How would Rashi respond to this? According to Rashi, that all mechitzas, all sias mechitzas are permissible. So how would Rashi defend this idea that the Gemara is differentiating between the third and the fourth wall? So one could argue, according to Rashi, as follows, that when you machshir a sukkah, so in effect what you're doing is you're giving significance to the schach as well. It means Kol's band that didn't have kosher tefanos, and the schach was meaningless. So the schach wasn't serving as the schach, wasn't serving as an oil, wasn't serving as a halachic gag. When you start to put in the halachically necessary mechitzes, that is the building of the schach, so to speak. So I'm not touching the schach, I'm touching the walls. But by putting the walls underneath the schach, that gives chashivas to the schach, and that is considered to be like an asiyas agag. So Rashi agrees that asiyas agag is a problem with the rabbanon, and a gag that's a roi. Rashi was only mata mechitzes a roi. So Rashi holds that even though you're physically putting in walls, but halachically you're in a sense creating the schach, and that would pose a problem. This is just as an aside, we're not learning a chesukah right now. This is very much impact on this machlekes that post came about whether when you build a sukkah, forget about on Shabbos, and you know, if you build a sukkah regularly, you're allowed to build a schach before you build the walls. Is that a problem? So there are some post who say that maybe that's a problem. Maybe a shot of tasavlam and also there's a din that when you build the sukkah, so you have to make the schach. The schach comes into existence by itself. That's a problem. That's what the Gemara says. Let's say you have a big pile of hay, and a tremendous pile of hay, and you go with a bulldozer and you push out the middle of the pile. So now you have a beautiful area with walls and schach on top of you. So the Gemara says that sukkah is possible in the Torah because you didn't make the schach. The schach came into existence by itself. It was a pile of hay that by you pushing out the middle, the schach became into existence. That's called tasa v'lumina asa. The Torah says, Chagasukah is tasa l'cha. And Tosha Rapeh explains that tasa refers not just to the celebration of the yom, it refers to the actual asiyas sukkah. So asiyas sukkah has to be tasa v'lumina asa. So there are some who wanted to suggest that the same is true. If you put up the schach first and then the walls, that's called tasa v'lumina asa. Because putting up the schach is meaningless. The schach doesn't have any significance to it if it's not supported by walls. So then when you put up the walls afterwards, so now the schach came into existence in a sense by itself. So that may be a chashash of tasam and also. So many, many people can disagree with that and say, that's not tasam and also. I made the schach. I did a physical mice of the schach. It's just that I didn't have walls yet. It's not like the case of the hay. The case of the hay, I pushed out the middle. I didn't do anything to the schach. The schach mamish came into existence by itself. In the case of building the schach before you build the walls, so that's a much, much lower potential problem of tasa lo and also. So that's a shayla. So part of this discussion in Rashi and Taisus seems to impact on that. But sometimes the shayla comes up. When it comes up, often most people don't put the schach up first. We're pretty silly to put up the schach first. But some people end up running into this problem when they build the canvas sukkahs, and then they want to touch up with the lovet straps. They want to, to solve the problem. But some Rishonim hold it when the walls fly in the wind, that's a problem. The Gemara in Sukkah says that a mechitza can't be a medes beruach. It's not considered to be a mechitza for the purposes of Shabbos or purposes of Sukkah. There was a machlokes to Rishonim. What does that mean? So some Rishonim say that the Ritva says that it only applies if the wall is going to fall down, mamash onto the floor. If the wall is just going to sway a little bit in the wind, that's still called a mechitz. And others potentially disagree with that. So that helps a big enough community of sukkahs. When you want to build a sukkah and you want to use canvas walls, according to the Ritva, that would be okay because the wind's ruach with tzvi is not going to knock the whole wall down. On the other hand, it's going to move it a little bit. So according to some poskim, that would be a problem. So in order to be yotzei, according to the opinion of the machmirim, many people have the practice that they put these lovet straps, these strings or straps or something, all around the walls of the sukkah. So it was less than three tefachim from the ground to the first strap, and then less than three tefachim for the next strap, and then less than three tefachim to the top, etc. So dal menachi, you could ignore the canvas, because the canvas isn't there, just build the sukkah just with the straps. So people don't like to build sukkahs just with straps. It gets cold and windy and animals come in, so whatever it is. So we want the walls are anywhere. But anyway, but according to some poskim, those walls are not really serving all that much. The real walls are actually the straps. Again, different opinions about that. So sometimes what happens is that a person will put up the canvas walls, when they put the schach on top. And then 2 days later, they'll remember, you forgot to put up the straps, so they'll start connecting the straps. So if you hold, and there's a problem with tassel and also by building the schach first and then the walls, that could pose a problem. Again, it's a lot of chumras here. Number one, according to many posts, according to Chazanish, the sukkah is kosher the way it is, even without any lovet straps, just walls that flow in the wind, so the Chazanish held is okay. So mikra din, the Chazanish says you don't even need it. But even according to the Machmirim, it's far from muskum. In fact, many posts can hold the whole thing is not true. But there is no such again, you should try to remedy that, try to fix up whatever you're doing with the walls, make sure it's all done, and then afterwards put up. So back to the story. So according to Rabbeinu Tam, sometimes you see a mechitzas arai is a problem. If it's mechitza materas, according to Rashi, there's no such thing. According to Rashi, all mechitzas are going to be mutter. It's a quirk. According to Rashi, you can't put up the third wall of the sukkah, not because of the mechitza shiloh, but because that's going to give chashivas to the gag, to the schach, but mitam the mechitza would be okay. What are some examples according to Rabbeinu Tam, mechitza materas? This is an important question because we pass in the Rabbeinu Tam, Shulchan Aruch, we pass in the chum like Rabbeinu Tam. That a mechitza materas is a problem. So what are some practical examples of mechitza materas? So one we gave with the third wall of the sukkah. Another one is the building of an eruv. Anytime that you do anything, then it has to be machshir the eruv. So you have an area that you wanted to carry in, and so it has to be those who are building with the eruvin. So we've already looked over 90 blot of different scenarios in order to be machshir the area. So if you have to put up another wall, you have to put up a lechi, you have to put up this, you have to put up that, whatever. You know, your pasta, your roof, whatever different things you're doing, anything that's going to be done that's going to affect a heter of carrying. Before you did what you did, it was also to carry, now it's mutter to carry. So that by definition is a mechitza materas. Those are the two examples that Rabbeinu Tam gives. He gives the example of a mechitza for sukkah, the third wall of a sukkah, as well as the mechitza for Eruvin, to be carrying in Shabbos. Are there any other examples? So the Marami Ruthenberg is quoted. Ruthenberg was the end of the period of the Balei HaTosfos. He was the Rebbe of the Rosh. Rabbi Ruthenberg is quoted as saying that there's a din that a person is not allowed to do things that are disrespectful in front of a Sefer Torah. And one of the things you're not allowed to do is one's not allowed to go to the bathroom. You're not allowed to go to the bathroom in front of a Sefer Torah. And there's a big machlokes at Poskim about how much that carries over to Svarim. So today, our Svarim are printed. So there was a shot in the Poskim, whether the printed Svarim have the status of real Svarim or not. We try as best we can. We try to be machmir for that. We treat our sperm with kedusha. We don't really bring our sperm into the bathroom. We try to put our sperm into shemus. But there was some opinions that maintained that maybe printed is not the same. But again, we try not to follow that view. But in the olden days, there were mamish writings, right? Different sperm, not just a ketera. So a person wrote the mishnayos. A person wrote a gemara. A person wrote a tshuva. Wrote sukkah chumash, whatever it was. So even though it wasn't a full-fledged sefer Torah, so those things had to be treated with kedusha as well. So the Marmar Ruthberg writes, you have to be careful not to go to the bathroom in front of your sperm. In our world, that would be like, why would we be having this discussion? Going to the bathroom in front of this farm. Well, in the olden days, they didn't have bathrooms. Like we had, they didn't have running water, have plumbing. So people would had outhouses. They would walk out of the house and go to the bathroom. The problem was that sometimes in the middle of the night, a person fails to get up, they have to go to the Merrick Lyme in the middle of the night. So it's cold, it's dark, they don't want to start walking, tearing around outside. So they very often, people would have like a little corner room somewhere in the house. Sometimes they would go to the bathroom even in the house itself. So the Maram Ruthenberg writes, you have to be careful that if you have svarim that are in your house, so you have to be careful not to go to the bathroom in the presence of those svarim unless you have a mechitza there, unless you have a chiluk rishus. If you have a mechitza of 10 tfachim between you and the svarim, so then it would be okay. So the Maram Ruthenberg is quoted as saying that Friday night, person wakes up in the middle of the night, they can't make such a mechitza. Tuesday night, you can scrounge around, put together a piece of wood, grab a plank or something and put it in front of you between you and the svarim. You can't do that on Friday night because that's a violation of a mechitza materas. Because here you're building a mechitza to do an activity you couldn't do before. Before you had the mechitza, you couldn't go to the bathroom in front of the svarim. Now you want to go to the bathroom in front of the svarim, so that's a problem. You're not allowed to construct that mechitza on Shabbos. So what would you have to do? So the Maamar Ruthenberg quotes the Gemara that says that you're allowed to be meisiv al ol haroi. Whenever something is only awesome, mishum ol haroi, so you're not allowed to build an ol haroi in Shabbos or Yom Tov, but you're allowed to add on to it. As long as it was started a little bit before, you can extend it. So Rabbi Ruthenberg is quoted by saying that every Friday afternoon, he would build a little bit of a wall. He put a little bit of a partition there. He probably didn't want to put a whole partition. I don't know how big the house in Ruthenberg were. I imagine they weren't so big mansions. So he didn't want to take up half his house with a wall. So he would put a little bit of something there before Shabbos would start. And then he knew that if he had to go to the bathroom Friday night, he could extend, add a little bit to it in order to separate between him and the svar. But otherwise, to build the mechitza, a teres, to be matir, to build the svar is a problem. So all the achronim ask a cash against this Maimon Rittenberg that although it sounds like this should qualify as a mechitza materis, which should be a problem according to where we found Rabbeinu Tam, it seems to be contradicted by a Gemara. The Gemara says Beitza seems to say almost the exact opposite. The Gemara in Beitza is not talking about Shabbos, it's talking about Yontif. The Gemara raises the question about Kibuy Haner. We know that many malachas are permitted to be done on Yontif, things that are Echel Nefesh are permitted to be done on Yontif, and certain malachas are a little bit tricky, whether they're covered by that Heter, Echel Nefesh, or Tzvach Haguf, things of that nature. So some of the malachas are a little bit trickier. So one of the malachas that's a little tricky is the malach of Kibuy. Are you allowed to extinguish a fire? To light a fire, you're allowed to do. There's an Issa Midirabon on the Mishnah Beit that says to start a fire from scratch. That's a totally different story. No other reasons. But that's not a discussion. In terms of Malachas Yomtif, so to light a fire is mutter as long as it's a tzarchayim. You're allowed to cook with the fire, let it read with the fire, heat up the house with the fire, whatever's a tzarchayim is mutter to light a fire. What's the din of kibuy? Are you allowed to be mechaba in there if it's some kind of a tzarchaguf? What kind of tzarchaguf could it be? The Gemara says, what would the din be if a person wants to be together with their wife on Yontif night? So the din is, you're not allowed to be mishabash b'tosad or haner. There's an isser to have tashbash in front of a candle that's lit. So the Gemara raises the shayla, ma'al l'chabas is in there. Are you permitted to put out the fire, to blow out the candle in order to permit tashbash amitah? So on the one hand, it's a tzarcha haguf. On the other hand, you're not doing havar, you're doing kibuy, so it's kibuy mutter or aser. So the Gemara has a whole complicated yontif angle about that discussion. So in the middle of that discussion, the Gemara has a very, very strange line. The Gemara says, what do we have to people about whether it's mutter or aser? It's such an easy way to solve the problem, the Gemara says. Just put up a mechitza between you and the ner. And the din is, as long as it's not pifnei haner, so it's mutter. So the Gemara says, just put up a mechitza, what's the big deal? The Gemara says, he doesn't have a mechitza. Cash no mice, Matthias, he doesn't have a mechitza. But the Gemara in the middle of the pilpul of that sugya throws out of such a milsad of shita, just put up a mechitza, what's the big deal? So all the achronim jump on the Maamar Rittenberg and say, wait a second, what do you mean put up a mechitza? How can you put up a mechitza? Isn't that a mechitza on a terrace? Before the mechitza was put up, so you weren't allowed to be mishamish and tassel there and there. Now you're going to put up a mechitza, so that's going to solve the problem. That's going to be matter the problem. Isn't that a violation of mechitza hamateres? Isn't that what's the difference between the mechitza to be matter tashmish and the mechitza to be matter lahashtin to go to the bathroom in front of the svarim? What's the difference? So the Ramah writes that the stam of the Maamar Rittenberg must have learned the Gemara to mean, and the Gemara says, what's the big deal? Put up a mechitza. What that meant was put up a mechitza be biyad yom. That means do like the Maamar Rittenberg did. That means start the mechitza from before yom, but then extend it. The Gemara never meant to say that it's a that it's mutter mamash l'chadchila to build a mechitza on Yontif. The Gemara just meant to say that there are ways to do it, and one of the ages to do it is ayin Maamar Rittenberg, ayin figure out how to do it. And the goal of the Gemara there in Beitza was not to tell me the dinim of mechitza materas. That wasn't the sugya. The Gemara was really asking the question about l'chabas aner. In the middle of the discussion, the Gemara just threw out kind of in passing, what's the big deal? Just put up a mechitza. But in reality is that to put up a mechitza stam yesh b'yayin would potentially be a problem. And so the Magen Avraham has a different view. The Magen Avraham says that there are two kinds of mechitzas, says the Magen Avraham. That there's an iser to a person who is shabbos b'tosel or haner, he's exposed to the candles right in front of him. So there are two different ways to solve that problem, says the Magen Avraham. So one way to solve the problem is to make a mechitza in such a way that it mamish covers the candle. It means the candle is being blocked. So the candle's not where I'm standing. I can't see the candle. So that's that would be okay. That's for sure okay. Then there's another solution, says the Magen Avraham. Even if the candle itself is not mamish covered, if the candle is in a different rishus, if it's chalik rishus liatzmai, if it's in a different domain, so that's not technically called bifnei haner. So says the Magen Avraham, if all you want to do is just build the tenth tefach and mechitza between you and the candle, so then you're trying to be matrid based on hilchos mechitza. You're trying to be matrid based on creating a new rishus. That's a huge problem. That's a mechitza materis. That's problematic. But says the Magen Avraham, if you're building the candle, you're building the wall in such a way that it mamish covers the candle. Forget about it being just 36 inches or so to me, and I can't see the candle anymore. So then that's not a b'toras mechitza. That's b'toras. I can't see the candle anymore. That's not called b'fnei haner. So that technically would be permissible. So just because the Gemara says that it's mutter to make a mechitza doesn't always mean it. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. So at the end of the day, it would appear from the notwithstanding what the Gemara Maseches Beitzah seems to ignore, the later poskim of different taiches in the Gemara, whether the Ramos Pshat or the Ramos Pshat, it would seem to come out la'alocha that the construction of these kinds of mechitzas, these kinds of walls, either to permit going to the bathroom in front of Svarim or to permit the Mishamish Mishneh Haner, would potentially be a problem. The same presumably would be true, which is probably the most common of all these shaylas, is l'shamish mitasav of Nes Svarim as well. Is to put together the two things that we said. Now, just as there's a din that you're not allowed to go to the bathroom in front of Svarim, that's disgraceful to the Svarim, so too one's not allowed to be mishamish mitasav, is not to be together with one's wife in front of the Svarim as well, unless the Svarim are separated, unless there's a choluk or rishus, unless there's some kind of a chita separated between Shabbos, let's say Friday night and Yom Tov night, so one would not be permitted to put up that mechitza. That would be a problem. When it comes to Mishamish Beltan and Svarim, the Poskim have a different aid. So the Poskim say that there are actually two different ways to solve the problem of Mishamish Beltan and Svarim. One is Ideuchas Mechitza, to create a different domain, which is not going to work for you on a Friday night or Yom Tov night. The other aid is if you do what's called the Kli B'Sol Kli, the Kiss B'Sol Kiss. If you have a double covering on the Svarim, say, I'm not building a Mechitza. Let's say there's some Svarim in the room. So a person's visiting somebody's house very often, they put into a bedroom, there's Svarim in the bedroom. So instead of building a mechitza on Friday night, which is a whole complicated halachic issue, if you simply cover over the Svarim, so I don't build a mechitza. I take a towel, take a sheet, I take something, and I throw it on top of the Svarim. So the din is, as long as there's a double covering, so you take two towels, two sheets, whatever, and two articles of clothing, and the Svarim are covered over, so that's not building a mechitza, that's a different thing. You're allowed to cover things on Shabbos and Yom Tov. You're not allowed to build mechitza on Shabbos and Yom Tov. The bottom line is, in all these scenarios, if a person wants to be mat, there's certain kind of activities that would otherwise be problematic. Whether these activities include carrying on Shabbos, whether these activities include eating in the sukkah, whether these activities include disgraceful things in front of a svarim in terms of a bathroom, or whether they include mishamish b'fnei haner, any of the above, all of these things could be potentially problematic if a person wants to try to build a mechitza in order to solve these problems. The din that we have, it's the Ferish din in the Gemara, that you're not supposed to mishamish b'tasav b'fnei haner, so that din applies for us also, b'zman hazeh. The post can point out that it applies even if you have an electric light, so that would be a problem. So one's not supposed to really have a light on in the room. One has a lot of lights in other places. Let's say a person has light coming in from the outside, or there's light in the hallway or something. Those guys, that's not called bifnei haner because technically it's a different rishus. So whenever it's considered to be a different rishus, that would definitely be okay. Unless the post can say that in Kozet, the room shouldn't be totally light, shouldn't be mamish like the middle of the day. So it'll be a little light coming in from the outside, that's all right. But if there's a light on in the room proper, so then that has to be covered over. That has to be, you may not want to cover it on a Friday night. It's not the safest thing to throw a towel onto a lamp. But if there's actual mamshah light on, so that's something that is a concern. So again, during the week, either you turn off the light or there has to be some kind of mechitza or something. Otherwise, that would be a real problem in halacha. It's actually for that reason that the Gemara says in Maseches Pesach, in the fourth parak, that's why we have the minig of lighting candles on Yom Kippur. Most people think that the halachas neris of Yom Kippur is like the holiest, most significant halachas neris of the entire year. So it's actually funny because the halachas neris of Yom Kippur is probably the least important of all the halachas neris. It's only b'teres minig, it's not b'teres din. Halachas neris Shabbos is the din, halachas neris Yom Kippur, halachas neris Yom Kippur is only a minig because there's no real unig Yom Kippur anyway. You're not sitting down to your meal anyway. It's not going to be the regular suit anyway, obviously, on Yom Kippur. So there really is no requirement to having the candles present. Why do we light candles in Yom Kippur? That's what the Gemara says in Psachim, that it was a minhag that many communities had to light candles on Yom Kippur in order to remind the couple that they should be together. So it's one of the Chamesh Inuyim, you're not allowed to do in Yom Kippur to be with one's wife. So a good way to remember that is you have a candle on the room. If you have a candle mamash in the room, then they can remember that, hey, what's the candle on? It's supposed to be dark. It must be, remind themselves that it's Yom Kippur. They won't come to the Aveira. That's why it's a question that most of the women, they light candles every Yom Kippur, they light candles downstairs in the regular place. So it's probably more correct, in addition to the Yom Kippur candles that they light, they should turn on some kind of a nightlight or something, put on something in the bedroom that should serve the real, because the real, real minig is really not so much for the candles to create the aura of Yom Kippur, it's really just to serve as that protection. So it would probably be more correct to light something. I'm going to say a little light, a candle light, or turn on an electric light, turn on a little nightlight or something. You know, a little plug-in, whatever it is, that should be on Yom Kippur night. So that way it should serve the proper fulfillment of that meeting that we have. Yeah.
Do women make a bracha when they light?
Women do make a bracha, yeah, which is
good. So why? How?
Well, it's not such a problem. We make brachas on a lot of minhagim. We make brachas on Halamish Chodesh. We make brachas on a lot of minhagim. I mean, according to the Sfarim, I don't remember what the Sfarim do. What do they make a bracha? I don't remember. Okay. Anyway, so getting back to that story. So we have a few examples of machitza materases. Some of them appear in the Gemara, according to Ben Atam. One is the issue of the wall for the Eir River, the wall for the Sukkah. They did the Marmurutberg added on one, and then the later post commanded on the others, etc. The most common shayla that we have today doesn't appear in the Gemara, doesn't appear in the Rishonim, doesn't appear in the Shulchan, doesn't appear in the Mishnah Berurah. That's the issue of constructing a mechitza for davening. So you have to wonder, why didn't anyone think about that? Why isn't that discussed by anybody? So the answer is because it was inconceivable that anybody should even talk about the topic, because this is a shayla that was made popular by NCSY Shabbatons. Whoever built mechitzas on Shabbos, even this, if you're davening in a shul, it's mechitzas on Shabbos. Who's building as a slashim on Shabbos? I said, when do we have throngs of women are coming, and all of a sudden we have to start scrounging around, move mechitzas? It was unheard of until our generation. So now the place can, our generation, raise the shayla. What's the din? Can you construct a mechitzas on Shabbos? You can start moving around mechitzas. Very, very common shayla. You start wheeling around machitza, moving around machitza, creating ezos nashims in different places, especially in our climate today, where people are stumbling down with salah doors, and women are coming and going, and machitza are coming and going. What's the status of all those things in Shabbos? So, at first glance, one should say that should be a problem, because it's machitza materas. That means I couldn't daven here until I have the machitza, so now I put up a machitza, now I solve the problem. So once I'm seeing that in the sukkah, the Erev, etc. So, even though it's 100% certain that one requires mechitza to daven, one is not permitted to daven in shul without a mechitza, it's not 100% clear what the goal of that mechitza is, what we're trying to accomplish with that mechitza. It's not 100% even sure where the makor for that is. The Gemara in Masechet Sukkah does speak about the Nezos Noshim in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara says that it was absolutely critical, necessary for them to have a Nezos Noshim in the Beis HaMikdash. Moshe Feinstein has a famous shul, many famous shuls about this topic of Mechitza and Shul, and his theory throughout the entire sugi is that it's a real din deraisa, that you can't have a Tzachok Mikal's Rosh, and you can't have that whole levity in the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore the requirement of Mechitza in the Beis HaMikdash is an absolute din in the Torah. And then Ramosha goes on to say that he thinks that carries over to a shul as well during davening, even though it's not clear whether all the dinim of Kedushas Beis HaMikdash carry over to shuls. There are certain things you're allowed to do in the shuls, you're not allowed to do Beis HaMikdash. And according to many, it's only Midrabanan, though Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, where Ramosha claims that B'shas HaTfilah is definitely, it's called the Mokom Kadosh, he's saying Dvarim Shebe Kedusha, and a place that's being used for Dvarim Shebe Kedusha has a certain degree of Kedushas HaMikdash to it. You're not chayav koris become to shul tama. It's not exactly the same, but it's some aspects of kedushas hamikdash to it. And therefore, Moshe said he thinks that this din carries over. And therefore, if you have a shul that doesn't have a mechitza, he thinks that would be a serious problem, or even a potential problem in the Torah. Not everyone agreed to that. Some argued that in the base of mikdash maybe was a derais, so maybe the shul was only a derabbanan in the requirement of mechitza. So it's not exactly clear just to what degree of severity the halacha requires. Everyone agrees that you need it. Nobody, no respectful paisek has ever said you could have in a shul without a mechitza. But exactly whether it's a real bona fide din deraisa like mikdash, or whether it's the same way that they instituted another dinim derabanan of shuls ke'ena mikdash, that's a little bit unclear. And what the goal of the mechitza is also a little bit unclear. Moshe in his tshuvas, he has many tshuvas about mechitza and shuls, and all the tshuvas he pretty much has the same idea that the goal of a mechitza is to prevent Tzchok Mekalas Rosh, which is to prevent inability to talk freely during davening. You shouldn't be talking to the man next to you also during davening, but for sure it shouldn't be Tzchok Mekalas Rosh, men and women shmoozing together during davening. And therefore, the mechitza has to be able to accomplish that. That's where Moshe has his psak, that the mechitza has to be high enough to make it a significant impediment to a casual conversation. And Moshe said he thought about 5 feet or so, that's approximately shoulder height of a regular person. He thought, even though you theoretically could scream or extend your tippy toes and talk over the top, it's not a good way to make conversation. And therefore, he thought that if it's 60 inches meeker, then it's okay, even though people can see, the women are a little bit taller, you can see over the mechitza, but he thought that meeker, that would be okay. Others disagreed with Ramesh. Others suggested that the goal of the mechitza was to prevent the stachlos, to prevent the men from seeing the women, and therefore the mechitza has to be high enough that the men can't see the women. So it's going to be added on a few more inches. So there are different opinions in the Gedolei Poskim, just tachlos, how high the mechitza has to be, depending on what you think the goal of the mechitza is. But everyone agrees you need it. So now the question becomes, if you need it, so then shouldn't it be a mechitza materas on Shabbos and Yom Tov, which would pose a problem? So there's a famous pesach of the Rav, and I think that's what the practice is. I think all the shuls rely on this lemaisa. that the Rav held that even though the halacha requires it, the Rav was one of the biggest machmir menuchas mechitza. Rav was the one who had his famous psach back in the 50s and 60s, that even if it means missing tkiyah shofar deraisa, it's better to miss tkiyah shofar deraisa than to daven in a place that doesn't have a proper mechitza. But after b'chein, the Rav said that it's hard to call a mechitza for shul, for davening, a mechitza materas. Mechitza materas is almost like more in sync, like Eruvin and Sukkah. Those are two examples that the Gemara gives, which objectively require hilchas mechitza shabbat, adin mechitza shabbat. A mechitza in shul is not a mechitza in halacha. Like Lamashal, we wouldn't apply the kulas of hilchas mechitza. You can't have a mechitza in shul that's a turis ha-pesach. You can use it to its best carry with, but you can't use it to its best to serve as a mechitza and shul, because the goal of the mechitza and shul is not really to be a mechitza; it's to prevent whatever you think is preventing, whether it's takhlis or kalas chum, kalas rosh. But it's not an objective of mechitza. So just a pesach wouldn't. The things, all the klalim that we have for mechitzas that govern uchus mechitzas don't really apply to mechitza and shul. So we colloquially call it a mechitza. That's the term we use. I don't even, that's not even like a halachic term, mechitza and shul. There is no real halachic term. It's as a snosh, whatever you want to call it. But the term mechitza and shul is not really a halachic in nature. And therefore, it's not called a mechitza materas. And therefore, it would be permissible in Shabbos and Yom Tov to set it up. So I think that's the nice what people do when they move, they undo it, they set up, they take it apart. They're again, none is the rice anyway. You're not building anything. You're just moving things around. So it's all aroy anyway. It's all temporary. So mikra din, I think the oilam is noik, lahokil. Like the Rav. But the bottom line is that if something does constitute a mechitza materas, then it would pose a problem. Mahalach, you just have to fine tune the details. What is or what is not a mechitza materas? Hopefully, Mitzvah next week, so we'll try to continue with some of the sugyas in Bona, but branch out a little bit out of Bona in terms of gagas and mechitzas into things a little bit less structure oriented. Binyan as relates to Kalim, so very, very important shadows of mice in terms of potential building related to Kalim, building related to Ochlim, food. No, other kind of assorted topics that are almost like subcategories of the Malach of Baino. That's from next week. We'll continue. Okay, we'll keep you posted in terms of the timing for the Shia. Just from the Olam here, does this time generally work for people better?
Just get a survey. 9 o'clock is better, but whatever.
9 o'clock is better? Okay, so we have to try to get a sense, because we'll have to really get a sense. For me, it may be a drop. We'll see. We'll talk as the week goes on, okay? So keep posted in terms of what the final time will be, okay? Okay.